Nacho Vigalondo alone. We haven't talked about him on the show really a lot yet, but that's going to change. I think we have a lot of Nacho to discuss, and I think we may even actually be able to hear a little bit from Nacho. So that's something to tease down the road.
He's my favorite director named after a food.
Peter Linguini will be crushed.
I'm sure he will. It's to say nothing of the despair currently washing over Johnny Beefsteak.
So,
yeah, it's late enough that was funny to me.
Ladies and gentlemen, this program is for you, not your children.
What is the meaning of this? You think up your story, I've got mine.
Now, there's only two of us here tonight, and we're going to lock ourselves in my room.
I want to report a murder. Who was murdered?
I was.
I advise you to call this party off now. The ghosts are already moving, and that's a bad sign.
Do you call this a party?
Could be.
Mr. Bill, let's get out of here. Why, this place is a walking cemetery.
Wait a minute, Jeff. What's a zombie?
Stop it. You're ignorant.
They're coming to get you, Barbara.
Hello, jerks. No, that's not right. That's not friendly. We're friendly. Hello, everyone. I'm Trevor T. Trujillo, and you're listening to the Nighthawks podcast, the cinema-centric podcast for people who like to stay up after midnight. We're a pair of those fellas. We're also film critics over at fanboytv.com, where you can also find the show notes for this episode and other episodes and other content from other people. It's really a one-stop shop for some hot fanboy-on-fanboy action.
Dude, phrasing. I'm Matt Foster. Most of that applies to me as well, but I am not nice. Grr. I'm Scrappy.
Well, speaking of Scrappy, boy, do we have a couple of movies for you featuring some strong central females, some strong female protagonists who are pretty darn scrappy.
Some self-rescuing princesses on deck here tonight.
We are A-okay with that. We are going to be watching the new Netflix acquisition, which just dropped this month, Hush, fresh off of its run and debut at South by Southwest Film Festival. And we're also going to be watching the Fantastic Fest alumni from a couple years back, produced by Guillermo del Toro, the Spanish thriller Julia's Eyes.
Two movies that will make you go, ooh, ah. Dang.
The reason I pitched these, number one, like I said, Hush is a recent addition to the Netflix queue, and it's a good movie and it deserves a lot of attention. I think this is a good pick. I think it's going to have a lot of crossover love. I don't think you necessarily have to be a genre fan to enjoy it. It's thematically similar to Julia's Eyes, which is a movie that came out a few years ago that really didn't get enough love when it came out and is something that we're hoping maybe we can turn a few people onto here today.
I wasn't overly aware of Julia's Eyes. I had heard of it, I guess, a bit. You had mentioned Hush to me. I didn't get to watch it at the fest. Tell you the truth, both of these need a little love. I don't think they're getting out there enough.
It's one of those things that they are notable because they feature a strong female protagonist, which honestly shouldn't be a big deal. It really shouldn't. But it is a big deal because society is talking about that, is making that a big deal. And I think it's kind of important to support these movies that appeal to a broader, more general audience rather than, you know, 18 to 35 white males. And so I think it's important to seek these movies out and for us to point them out so people know where to find them and where to look for them. To that end, like we said, Hush is on Netflix. We caught Julia's Eyes on the horror streaming service Shudder, which is actually a pretty formidable entry in genre streaming.
If you want Shudder, it's an Amazon subscription extension for Amazon Prime. It's
well,
a
like,
quick
can be
little $5 upgrade if you already have Amazon Prime. But I think what's interesting to me about these in terms of the sort of lingo of female protagony, as it were, these are not, what do they call that? The Trinity syndrome, when the female appears as capable as the male until it is time for her to teach him everything and then fade into the background, let him take over. These are female leads we follow for the entire movie. They aren't there to be instructors, mentors, second bananas, or deus ex machinas for male characters. They carry the entire film.
Especially in the case of Hush, was co-written by the lead actress. And so not only is this kind of a good example of a female-led action film in the performance vein, there's also some female action behind the camera, too. So that's always a plus.
The other thing, and particularly, like, we eventually have to start getting into the meaty portion of the podcast. I thought Hush was the stronger of the two.
Mm-hmm.
Not that either was bad. I was glad I watched both of these, but Hush follows an author who is hearing impaired.
She's hearing impaired and mute.
Quite a bit of interesting audio design happens here.
Oh yeah, absolutely. If you can watch Hush with an excellent sound system, I highly recommend it. I know this had a limited theatrical run, and I hope some people caught it there. But if you've got a good sound system in your house, this is a movie that will benefit from that.
I watched it on a pair of quality headphones. That was pretty interesting.
That would be probably pretty cool, too. It might lead to me kind of checking over my shoulder periodically throughout the night. But to that end, we should probably get into a actual proper synopsis for Hush. Hush is, as we mentioned, the main protagonist is a female author who is both hearing impaired and mute. So she can't speak and she can't hear. And she's kind of carved out a little living for herself. She's had one book and it's done well. She's struggling to write her second book. She's living out in kind of an affluent area, but it is a rural area of Alabama. And she's kind of carved out a little living for herself. She's got her home that is caters specifically to her particular characteristics. She's got some neighbors that she's somewhat close with. She's got friends who are always, you know, kind of on her. It's like, when are you going to find a man? How is the book coming? A lot of, you know, she's got a good support system in place. She's just really struggling to kind of bring this book to the forefront. And her problem is something that I think a lot of it.
Hey there, beautiful, successful professional who's well adjusted, apparently. When are you going to start a family and feel complete?
Yeah, there's a little bit of that, but she's not having any of it, which is admirable. As the night draws on, a mysterious killer kind of steps out from the shadows and decides that this particular scenario would do well for him to have a little fun, an almost literal game of cat and mouse between the two of them. And so what we have is, it's kind of a home invasion movie, but it's the killer is more interested in screwing with his prey than he is doing a swift job of dispatching her. But that gives her just enough wiggle room that she might be able to fight back. It's this author and kind of using her strengths and her resourcefulness and her creativity as an author to try and survive the night. It's a really good suspense movie. It draws fair comparison to, say, A Wait Until Dark, as does Julia's Eyes, as a matter of fact. In this particular case, even the director acknowledges his two main influences were Wait Until Dark and Die Hard.
Come out to the coast, we'll get together, have a few laughs.
So if that's a combination that makes sense to you, this is probably a good one to check out.
I liked the way her issues were handled because it dealt with the situation, made it clear how different the situation would be. At the same time, never really played her for weak over it.
This character is a writer. She's not Rambo. She's not combat trained. She doesn't own a gun. You know, she's a quiet, timid writer who is kind of keeps to herself.
I do a little bit question the realism of somebody from Alabama not owning a gun. That was that did mess with my suspension of disbelief a little, I'm not going to lie.
She's not strong in that regard. She is strong in non-conventional ways, ways that are not typical for this type of home invasion, Bruce Willis, Die Hard type movie. And what's really refreshing is you can tell that this part was written for a woman. This was a character that was intended to be a woman. It wasn't that they wrote a script, said, hey, you know what's selling at the box office? Women. And so they just, they changed the gender on the main character, and now it's... No, this is a fully realized woman in this role, and I think it's stronger for that. I really do.
The conventional route through a thriller is sort of rejected a little here. The typical... We start with our final character. We start with our lone survivor, and she's lone for most of the movie. There are some other people here. There are some other murders here. But we don't have the winnowing down of the gang of teenagers. And in fact, this person is... What would you say she was? She's mid-30s?
Yeah, she... When we say this is a strong woman, we mean she's a strong woman. She's not a 22-year-old ingenue fresh off Hollywood Boulevard.
It's an interesting parallel with, I don't want to get ahead of ourselves, but the lead in Julia's Eyes is also, I mean, not the age Hollywood caters to, which you can get away with in Spain. Like in Spain, the ideal male is the most interesting man in the world from the beer commercials.
Stay thirsty, my friends.
And the ideal lady is sort of a distaff counterpart that is a little bit more worldly and educated and a little less of an airhead. European femininity is a little different in that sense. Even though Spain is sort of dripping with machismo, sometimes counterproductively. I like this movie because it had the quality of when you're thinking to yourself, oh, she should do X, she realizes it about the same time and does it. It does have one of my personal pet peeves, which is the old stab and run. Like you get a solid hit in on the killer and so you retreat. I'm driven nuts by that. I'm just like, keep getting him. You're winning. Get him.
Well, and she has to play it really carefully because about the time she realizes she has to go on the offense and put her head in the game is about the time where the guy's kind of done screwing around with her. And so there is a genuine tension there. He can literally walk up behind her and she will not know. On top of that, if she runs away, she has no idea how much noise she's making. Is she going to tip him off? And so there's a lot of these what-ifs and... maybe this would work, but probably not scenarios. And they even address some of that in the movie. But I think it really lends itself to being a very serious and sincere tension there. And that's something that I feel is missing from a lot of movies that would try and attempt something similar.
The villain here is kind of an interesting character because, like, at one point he even sort of gets in a confrontation with another male character and he uses... quite a bit of guile because he's not that big of a guy and sort of resorts to kind of a ruse gambit to trick him. And then his weapon of choice is the crossbow, which I thought was pretty interesting. Like, so sort of creepily selected to be sort of a quiet nocturnal thing to use. I always hate it. there's a couple times in this where a crossbow, like someone gets hit with a crossbow and it's sort of, it sticks partway through them or just, you know, this is the same complaint I have with The Walking Dead. Crossbows are really strong. Like a crossbow bolt would go through a human being, much less a zombie. And I realize it's a film and we can't have the 5-minute film where everybody does everything right. Everything's technically correct. And you know, I think there's a killer outside. What should I do? Call the cops. Okay. I did that. They came and dealt with it. Roll credits, you know?
Well, and I do have to say, there is a lot of... They address the fact that there is no signal out there. They also, quite cleverly, she would have to make the phone call over FaceTime because she can't hear and she can't speak. And so that eliminates a lot of possibilities. And on top of that, there is a little kind of... a little game of cups going... you know, cup and ball with where is the cell phone, who's got it, in whose pocket... And that's really fun. And overall, I think this is a movie that this needs to be a big deal film. This needs to be one that folks, please watch it on our say-so. Please watch it because we're telling you to. And if it's good for you if it treats you well. Tell a friend, because this is a movie that deserves attention. This is a pair of filmmakers who deserve attention.
Oh, it was a pair? I didn't read anything about the production of this. Who made this?
It was a husband and wife team. Kate Siegel, who is the lead actress, co-wrote and obviously stars. And then the director, Mike Flanagan, some of our listeners may know from the recent horror film Oculus, which was something that was pretty well received in genre circles.
See, Oculus was one. I actually kind of liked Oculus because it has sort of a weird first-hand depiction of what it's like to be possessed. Like what those weird moments of lost time look like to the people they're happening to. And how you'd have to try to deal with that from within. But it caught a lot of heat I didn't think it deserved, actually.
See, I liked it as well. I think it's another one that, if you're liking Hush, it's well worth checking out. Something else I enjoyed, speaking to well-directed movies and why Flanagan's going to be on my list of people to kind of keep tabs on, there is very little dialogue in this movie. Obviously, with a mostly silent killer and a deaf-mute protagonist, there's not a lot of conversation. But as we mentioned, the sound design here is especially remarkable because it manages to use sound to signify soundlessness, which I think is an interesting choice. I think it's an effective choice. But you do switch perspectives in this film. Sometimes you're outside with the killer. Sometimes you're inside the house with your protagonist. And things, there is a dull white noise. And you know that things are going on inside the house that now you can't hear. It kind of dials up the ratchet on that suspense again.
This character lost her hearing when she was in her early teens. And one of the things they discuss is that she does have sort of a... Because she did learn to speak, she has kind of an inner monologue. And she describes, what does that voice look like or sound like? And she says, well, it reminds me of my mom. And by the end of the movie, we've sort of, I don't know if this might be a mild spoiler if you want to skip 30 seconds, but by the end of the movie, you sort of realize that it's an internalization of a voice that essentially would be her voice, you know, if she could speak. And it's very strange idea. It's hard to explain, but it works well in the film.
I think I don't want to say too much about it because I do think that people need to go out and find this and experience it. I will say it is a movie that deals with home invasion and violence against women, so do with that information what you will. There have been a few people that I said, yeah, you can watch it, but you may not want to watch it at night at home alone without the door locked, you know? So that's something I want to prepare people for. In the industry now that women are becoming more of the forefront and in those positions... where they are our protagonists, that means that, you know, in order to raise the stakes and to have the stakes be something that are significant, we have to put these characters in harm's way. And why this draws a parallel to Die Hard, as we mentioned at the top of the show, both sides of this contest, number one, you don't know who's going to win. This movie is bleak enough that this might not have a happy ending. Also, both sides draw blood, and it is significant. And they let their protagonist and they let their villain get really messed up. It allows them to be hurt.
It's one that sort of hurts to look at in a couple spots. I think the important difference here is this movie is kind of an exploration of this person's lifestyle choices and their decision to be independent. It's a lot of these movies have no kind of coherent theme or subtext. They're just basically an excuse for shit to go down. This is not a movie that is just about an excuse for things to happen. It is a movie where things that happen are the catalyst for something. So it has just a more grounded arc than the typical home invasion movie. In my opinion, better performances.
You know, it's interesting that we did some video content, so you know we're kind of sticking our toe in that well for Green Room, which is another. It's more of a siege movie than a home invasion movie, but there are elements that those kind of bottle elements of invasion. We've also got that we're talking about in the show, It's not a traditional invasion, but there is some invasive themes to be had in Julia's Eyes that we'll talk about later in the episode. Another film I caught at South by Southwest that we're going to bring up later in the episode is Fede Alvarez's new one, Don't Breathe, another home invasion movie. So there seems to be a theme kind of working in the system right now, and especially around independent films about home invasion. I think probably one of the more notable examples, there was The Invitation that just came out. There was also Your Next was a big deal.
Kidnapped. I liked the Spanish language one that had a very similar minimal to no cutting away, much like Victoria,
mm-hmm.
another Fantastic Fest movie we discussed. To tell you the truth, like, home invasion doesn't trip my trigger very much. Like, it's not a huge subgenre for me.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's interesting because it is, like you said in your disclaimer, it's a genre that is different when you're watching it in the theater. When you watch it in the theater, you're thinking about what's happening in your house. When you're when you're watching it in the house, it's a little, it's almost like the first, I would say it's the first subgenre intended to be watched at home. Like, you know, it's the first thing that tries to profit by being shown on a small screen.
Well, and I'll even say, I'm glad Netflix picked this up. Now, I'm a little disappointed because I think a lot of people will lose the sound design in this, which is unfortunate, but it's certainly not going to ruin the movie for anybody. But the fact that there is still this kind of weird prejudice against films that don't get a major theatrical release, like somehow they don't count because it's direct to DVD or direct to Netflix, it's not a quote-unquote real movie, I take offense with that. And rest assured, like I said, Hush did have a limited theatrical release, so by any definition, it is a real movie. But not all real movies have to be made with the theatrical experience in mind. Too Late, another Fantastic Fest movie. That movie was meant to be watched in the theater. Hush is probably going to get a severe degree of something being watched at home.
I watched Hush off a laptop with a pair of headphones on, and it was, I think it might have been the best way to watch Hush.
Speaking a little bit to that home invasion theme, though, is I think, and you know, this could be me totally talking out of my. It seems like with this discussion that's going on, especially about privacy and what it is to be private in the internet age, you know, what are your privacy expectations on Facebook? What are your privacy expectations when you're talking on the phone? What are your privacy expectations when you use an iPhone versus your privacy expectations using a different brand? A lot of these have been thrust into the spotlight lately, and I think a lot of movies are starting to mirror that tension that comes from, oh my God, who is in my life and who is seeing things that they're not meant to see. I think films like Nacho Vigalondo's Open Windows speaks to that very directly. And then I think there are movies like Hush or Your Next that speak to it on a more metaphoric or a less literal level.
You know, privacy and technology are constantly affecting movie making, just because, especially horror movie making, because we've watched for years now people convolute various reasons the cell phone doesn't work, you know, and just that little interplay with suspension of disbelief is a way that privacy has changed in the movies. But that might be the reason this little subgenre is building to such a pitch, is because your home, your little nest, is where you can turn some of that stuff off. And that's, you know, that's maybe why the modern incarnation of the home invasion movie is a little different than, say, you know, what was The Last House on the Left, which was kind of the prototype. Those were generational movies. They were about the parents not being ready for the debauchery of this new generation, you know, and this new, the horrors of urban crime. And this is actually, if anything, there's a theme here that is a reaction to suburbanization. It is, you've gone too far from community, and now you're out here alone. It is people that have given up the insulation of a crowd. and now they're paying a price for it for going too far afield, almost closing the loop of the it's instead of leaving a home and encountering things on a distant adventure, it's you've made your home too far away and now the adventure's happening there.
Well, and on top of that, I think this movie is specifically notable in that the killer, whom we don't know a lot about, he is intentionally kept vague, and that's something that I'm just going to keep underlying. That's okay when that happens in a movie. If you don't know why the killer is on a mad rampage, that's okay because you're not supposed to relate to the killer. You're relating to the victim. She doesn't know his backstory. She just knows that he's standing out there. And the point I'm driving at, though, is that the killer allows that barrier to be maintained. He stays outside. She stays inside. A lot of times there's nothing more between them than a pane of glass. He allows her to maintain herself in her house and just kind of hovers around the outside, which is not typical of a home invasion movie. A typical home invasion movie, he's going to be invading her space. And, you know, eventually we think it's going to go there. But I think the cat and mouse that's played with the window in between them is especially effective.
Well, and it's very interesting that it's not this invader, his sort of forte is not actually getting in there as quick as possible. Like he's getting something out of the process. And I like that we don't know a lot about him. What do we need to know about him, really? Is there something in his background we need to know to render him sympathetic? Is there something methodological that matters? Is there something, you know, that's not... And this is ironic because I know ahead of time what I'm going to say about Julia's eyes. But in this case, it worked well. I didn't really need to know the killer's background. I didn't need to know his secret origin.
Well, and we've applauded many times on the show before movies that have a certain kind of they're very judicious with their exposition, you know. And there's a lot of that here. You don't know why she's deaf and mute unless you're paying attention. And you notice that on her biography, on the back of one of her novels that you see for maybe 2 seconds, it mentions an attack of meningitis. And unless you're paying attention, you missed that little nugget. But at the same time, it doesn't really matter because her meningitis doesn't enter into the equation as much. What you are told expressly is that she once had power of her ears and power over her voice, and she lost it. And that's what's important to the movie. That's what they give you. That's what they spoon feed you. The rest of it is dressing that you have to kind of pick apart and find on your own, which I really enjoy. Apparently, the killer does have a backstory, and there are clues to his backstory kind of spread through the movie. But it was a backstory that the director and the actor came up between the two of them and never told anyone. And so I think that's really interesting. I think it's cool, and it's not something... We're not always meant to know everything. What we're meant to know is that this woman is in danger, and she has to rely on herself to get herself out, and that's what the movie's about.
What this does a good job of addressing, and what elevates it a little bit, is there's quite a bit here that speaks to essentially well-intentioned attempts to sort of undermine this woman's autonomy. She has relatives that want her to move back home, neighbors that check on her. Her neighbor is perfectly pleasant, but her neighbor wants to learn sign language to talk to her better. And a lot of it's about sort of the world kind of pushing up on her, and maybe that the sort of cloyingness of that being a reason she chose to move farther out away. It adds extra shade and fruit when the killer has the tables turned on him a little bit. I really liked that aspect of it. And again, I really liked the sort of visual and sonic design here. Just set it a cut above. It's much better than average.
That's ultimately why we want to bring attention to it and why we want people to pay attention to it. So it's important, folks, that if this movie sounds like it's going to be something you're going to enjoy, please seek it out. It's on Netflix if you're a subscriber. It's well worth the time. $10 to $8 that you spent for this month alone. Once you do watch it and enjoy it, let people know, tell people about it, spread the word, because I would really like to see more from these pair of filmmakers.
it's one of those ones where you definitely want to see what these people will do for, like, their sophomore effort, you know?
Switching gears, we have Julia's Eyes. This movie is a couple years old now and comes from Spain. It's a Spanish language movie, so you're going to be dealing with subtitles, which really shouldn't be a hurdle for you. It's one of those things. You know, I think people eschew subtitles, and that's unfair because it only takes a little bit of practice to actually get really good about paying attention to both what's going on screen and what you're reading at the bottom. If you bring these movies in as options, all of a sudden, your taste in films just got so much wider. You have so many more contenders in play. So many interesting things are being done in countries where they don't speak English, and it's a shame to miss those just because you don't feel like reading. Yeah, buyer beware, it's a subtitled film, but that's okay.
Also, come on, it's subtitled in Spanish, man. Mexican's practically English. We all grew up with Sesame Street and Dora.
You liked the movie, you just didn't like it as much as Hush. Am I reading that right?
Yeah, I just...
Should we synopsize first and then we can talk about it?
Yeah.
Okay, so Julia's Eyes is the story of a woman who is investigating the death of her sister, a death that is ascribed to suicide, but our main character, our protagonist, Julia, believes otherwise. She believes that something is a little fishy. The pair of women suffered from a genetic kind of macular... a degenerative disease that was causing blindness. It's blindness that's brought on by times of hard stress. The sister is fully blind at the time of her death, and Julia is kind of taking it easy and trying to live an easy life, trying to prolong her life with her vision. Unfortunately, the death of her sister and then the resulting investigation causes Julia's eyes to deteriorate at a very rapid pace. So it's kind of up to Julia to get to the bottom of this mysterious death before she loses her sight completely. It's a great thriller. I think it's a lot of fun. I think it would pair well with Hush. Again, I think there are some similarities here with Wait Until Dark. I think that's a fair comparison. So I guess that could be our third unofficial movie of the episode, but... this one's well worth checking out. Once again, if you subscribe to Shudder or have the Shudder add-on on Amazon, this one is worth watching.
I did like this movie a lot. I'm kind of a sucker for the continental Spanish horror suspense directors.
Oh man, there's so many
cropping up a bit.
There's so many great genre films coming out of Spain. It's unreal. Something I did want to talk about. We discussed a little bit about how the director kind of conveyed being deaf in Hush. There's a real interesting way of conveying blindness in this movie. During the scenes where Julia is not seeing or is not seeing well, nobody in the movie, their faces are never shown. They're never given an identity. And it's only when her vision is working well enough that she can see that these characters then start to have identities and features and faces. And so I thought that was a real interesting way of doing it without being a literal blackout the screen, oh my God, I'm blind. They had kind of a neat metaphorical way of going about it, which I think was very interesting.
And admirably lo-fi, the temptation to cake on an extra effect was avoided.
Yeah, and so something I did want to bring up that new Fede Alvarez movie, I think a lot of people are going to enjoy that film. Once again, it's called Don't Breathe, and it's another home invasion movie. This time you're seeing it from the perspective of the invaders, and the person they are invading is played by Stephen Lang, and he's a blind veteran. And so there are some scenes in there where, the lights are off, and so Stephen Lang has the advantage. And what they do is they kind of do that night vision, think the end of Silence of the Lambs. They do that, but nobody's wearing any night vision. That's just, this is blind mode. So the audience can see what's happening, but we can convey that the characters can't see. And unfortunately, it falls flat. It doesn't really work in that film. So I was really tickled on this subsequent viewing of Julia's Eyes to see this really creative way of conveying blindness. And it's really effective, and it allows for some questioning of identity and some questioning of who are these people and are they who they say they are. And so it gives a little more air of suspense and a little more whodunit. And there is an aspect of whodunit to this. And really just a well-realized movie. And the style here, the two things I noticed, the score and the actual cinematography, the way the camera moves and the look of the movie are both top-notch. I mean, just dead out of a big-budget Hollywood film.
You know, a great deal worked here. I'll tell you what sort of threw a hurdle up for me is I didn't understand the peculiar nature of the killer very well. I didn't. At times, it's almost set up like it's a supernatural film, and other times it isn't.
The conceit is that the mysterious guy, the guy who may have killed this girl, is said to be somebody that you don't notice, that people just go without noticing, that he can move in and out of a room without people seeing him. And it's not really fully explained if he's just that plain and unassuming that people literally just don't notice him, or if there's a little Lamont Cranston, the shadow, supernatural going on.
Who knows what evil lurks in the hearts of men? The shadow knows.
I never really read it as particularly supernatural. I read it as a self-fulfilling prophecy that this particular character was made to be felt worthless, was made to feel worthless from a very young age. He has a particular relationship with blind people who rely on him. And he's also got this self-fulfilling prophecy that he'll never amount to anything, so he never did and never really resonates with people's memories.
And see, that's, I think, where the disconnect is, because I felt more like he was intended to have a power, and that I didn't think it was applied very well. Like sometimes he's patently invisible, like he walks through a room with people in it, and it's not... It's not, oh, he's a mousy guy. It's he walked right through a bunch of people. And then other times, it's he is kind of visible and is kind of detectable. And I chalked it up on watching. I put it on the language barrier. Like, just that it wasn't sort of... The metaphor it was being explained with in the Spanish just wasn't getting through. But that's the only thing that kind of drug me down a little bit. And not into the negative space, just kept it from fully clicking for me. But I liked a lot here. And again, I like that these are kind of, I won't say age appropriate, but I mean, this couple's probably in their 40s.
Yeah, I'd say mid to late 40s.
Yeah, and it's just interesting to see a horror suspense film that doesn't happen to teenagers.
God, it's like, so I'm damn just, relieving, I'm, too.
it's so cool when you get to see something that deals with some people that aren't constantly breaking balls, or B, constantly, get that camera out of my face. Why did we, I don't even know why you came. You know, just that you,
yeah,
you
know, yeah.
That you get, especially in found footage movies. Where it's just like, why are these people even in a car? Like, I know a script requires conflict, but I mean, don't go on vacation with people you actually hate. You know, maybe then you won't get eaten by Sasquatches.
Another thing that worked for me with Julia's Eyes is it had a great tone. There was this weird, I'll call it a patina of creepy all throughout it that was really interesting to watch. There's a scene where, as Julia is investigating, she happens into, it's kind of a recreation center for blind individuals. She overhears people talking about her sister, and so she kind of peers in and begins eavesdropping in this locker room filled with blind women. And we're not talking about, you know, being a couple of stalls over and listening in. She walks in among them, and they don't immediately detect that she's there, which is creepy and suspenseful. And then they clue into her and say, there's somebody here, which is double creepy and suspenseful. And so that was a scene in particular that was really effective for me.
Then, of course, that scene gets really creepy and gets triple creepy.
Yeah, I mean, and that's... It was great to see Guillermo's name as a producer on here. But, I mean, the director and the writer, a lot of this team knows what they're doing. And they made a really intense film.
I gotta say, I understand that it's sort of, you know, Tarantino has done this as well, but I don't think the producer's name needs to be that much bigger than the director's. I don't think that's the sort of thing his own ego demanded. It seems to me like someone in the marketing department decided that.
Oh, for sure. Because, I mean, a lot of people will line up to see a new Guillermo del Toro movie. You know, they may not necessarily line up the Spanish filmmaker that they're not familiar with. When it played Fantastic Fest, Guillermo del Toro was supposed to be there to host a Q&A, and unfortunately wasn't able to make it. But they really banked on his name, and as a matter of fact, one of the Mondo posters I own is a poster for Julia's Eyes for this movie. And it's listed as a Guillermo del Toro presents a film by Guillermo Morales. That's a draw. People look at that poster and say, Guillermo del Toro, why have I never heard of this? It serves a function, and it's not a function I'm against.
I guess it's just life, you know, it's going to be that way.
And that being said, I mean, there is a financial position usually in those producer roles, and Guillermo probably had a large hand in even getting this movie made to begin with, which is worthy of praise.
I don't know. I guess I'm just saying maybe they could have been the same size.
Well, maybe on the next one. Any final thoughts on Julia's Eyes?
It's inevitable to compare the two, and overall, I just thought the audio design in Hush was so good that it made the similar visual device in Julia's Eyes maybe not as good by comparison.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. Maybe I'm being a little too hard on it, but it just watching them one right after the other, I definitely, if it put a gun to my head, I liked Hush more.
Well, and I will say is that Hush is definitely the better, the crowd pleaser. It's an action film. There's no dead time. It really sucks you in. Julia's Eyes is definitely more cerebral. It's something you have to sit and pay attention to and fully immerse yourself in, which may not necessarily be a quote-unquote fun watch, but it's still a rewarding watch because it's still a fine film. But if you're just looking for something to give you the spilkus on a Saturday night, Hush will be my pick for that.
Julia's Eyes has definite lulls in it, whereas as Hush, once the kettle's on the burner, it just kind of keeps getting hotter. So I got to give it to Hush kind of across the board. The pacing's a little better. The design worked better for me. I did think the face thing was interesting. It was an interesting way to do a lot with a little, but it just didn't. And again, maybe one I watched on TV and one I watched with the intended audio, you know, I think my headphones are probably as good as watching it in the theater for audio. Maybe I prejudged it a little because of that, but we're not here to compare it. It's not, we don't watch two movies and then tell you guys to pick one.
No, I would highly recommend people watch both of these films. Julia's Eyes might be harder to come by. Julia's Eyes might be one you might have to pay for the rental, but it's well worth that $3.99. You know, it's if that's the movie you pick for a $4 movie night, it's money well spent.
I have to say, if all I got out of this was a good look around Shudder, it would have been worth it. They're not paying us, but it's kind of a cool little service.
No, yeah, we should probably throw them a shout out. It's like Netflix, but it's specifically for horror genre films. They were a sponsor of Fantastic Fest, and like you said, they haven't been in touch with us. This is an official sponsorship of us, but it's a cool little service that I picked up after Fantastic Fest and kind of have hung on to, and we'll probably be pulling more from there on down the road. So it's something, if you're a horror fan, definitely well worth checking out.
Well, they're not a sponsor unless they're listening and want to be one.
Hey, if they want to be one, they are more than welcome. Hey, if you want to be a sponsor, you're more than welcome. Get in touch with us. You can find us on Facebook, Nighthawks Podcast. We're on Twitter at Nighthawks Pod. We're available on iTunes, where if you would go and subscribe and leave a review and a rating, it would be a big help to us. So all of those ways to get in touch with us if you're just a fan or a sponsor, Because honestly, we wouldn't mind if the podcast started paying for itself. We're not looking to get rich. We just, you know, it'd be nice if we had some new equipment.
We just like it to not cost us money every month so that we can buy Starbucks with it. Everyone loves Starbucks. Starbucks is America.
All right, Matt. Well, yeah, it's definitely a high recommend on both of these for me. I guess, would you call it a marginal recommend for Julia's Eyes for you, or...
No, I mean, I'd still give them a high. Like, how granular can we get? We give Hush an 83 and Julia's Eyes a 77.5.
All right, Matt. Well, anything else? Anything else you got on your mind?
I don't know. Probably not at this time.
All right. Well, in that case, I think it's time for coffee and pie. If you excuse us, we're going to go retire over to the booth. And we're going to sign off because it's almost morning.